From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Cinema Symbolism. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Imagine you're standing at an ATM machine, and all of a sudden, little notes come out, not your cash, and the note says, "Please help, I'm stuck in here. Call my boss." What? That's exactly what happened in Texas. Shocked customers at a Texas ATM got more than cash from the money machine when a technician trapped behind it slipped notes through the receipt slot begging for help. Corpus Christi, Texas police say that the unnamed man, who's a contractor, got stuck in the ATM room in the back at a local Bank of America while attempting to change the lock on the machine. Now, people were going to the ATM to get money when the man stuck inside slid notes through the receipt slot saying, "Please help, I'm stuck in here, I don't have my phone, call my boss." Well, they all thought it was a joke, except one person who called the boss, and they got the guy out. At some large U.S. cities, what is going on there as they consider raising the minimum wages? But some state lawmakers are pushing back with laws that void or block the local efforts. They call it preemption bills. As they are known, they're growing more common, mainly in states where Republicans control the legislature and the governorship. They are being drafted and passed in response to moves by city officials, most of them Democrats, who raise the minimum wage and expand paid sick leave, among other things. St. Louis officials, for example, passed a city ordinance back in 2015, raising the minimum wage to $10 an hour. And Birmingham, Alabama approved a $10.10 base wage too. But in both cases, state legislators put a stop to the moves through preemption measures that prohibit county and municipal governments from setting their own minimum wages. Well, yesterday, the U.S. stock market hit another all-time high. And since Donald Trump was elected president, it's been up 17%. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Michael Mish Shedlock. Mish, it's not bad numbers.
It's a pretty good run, George, a pretty good run. He's taking credit for it. That's kind of silly. I don't think he would have been taking credit had it gone the other way. And we all know this is going to reverse at some point, so who's he going to blame it on? George, I literally don't know what to make of it. I mean, the Fed is doing these baby step hikes. I didn't believe they'd get them in at all because the economy is weakening. So, you know, what can you do? The labor market looks good. I have to give them that. But manufacturing looks pretty bad. Autos look pretty bad. Housing is kind of up and down.
Well, I talked to a real estate broker today who said, George, he's predicting, that's what he told me, within 24 months, another bubble. Not as bad as 2008, Mish, but he says it's going to happen.
George, I think we're back in a bubble here now. The big difference this time is that the Fed has revived the bond market. So I don't think it's going to bust in this big, massive collapse like it did last time. But it doesn't have to. All it needs to do is to sink pension plans, Illinois pension plans, despite this massive run in the stock market, George, 40% funded. What happens even if we see a 15, 20% down?
I know. We're going to have to watch it all. Mish, thank you so much. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter hospitalized in Canada after suffering dehydration while working at a build site for Habitat for Humanity. Habitat for Humanity said in a statement that the 92-year-old President Carter was dehydrated working out there in the hot sun. 92 years old, and he's out there building houses in Winnipeg. Is that amazing? A photo of smoke billowing from Mount Vesuvius shows what appears to be a ghoulish face looming above southern Italy's famous volcano. The disturbing image was taken as wildfires forced evacuations from the area. Some people say, is it a sign of the apocalypse? Joel Richardson, of course, is the producer of End Times Eyewitness and also an author and filmmaker and a recognized expert in biblical prophecy. Joel, I wanted to ask you, are we in some strange biblical time period now?
Well, I think there's no question that we're in a particular window where biblical prophecy is being fulfilled. With regard to issues like this, a ghoulish face in the smoke, I put this in the same category as Jesus's face appearing on a piece of toast or this sort
right.
of thing. We need to be careful of those kind of things. But in terms of actual signs that are being fulfilled that are aligning with the landscape of the last days as they were described by the biblical prophets, as we look at the alignment of the nations, most particularly in the Middle East, there's no question that biblical prophecy is being fulfilled in our day, but we need to be looking in the right places.
Let's look at those signs a little later, Joel. We got to get you back for a more lengthy program. Joel writes for WND.com and his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We have talked about North Korea. We have talked about North Korea trying to get nukes, putting them on missiles. We have talked about the possibility that what if North Korea launches a nuke at the United States, not just to hit land, but also in the atmosphere, creating an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, that would knock out the power grid. In a moment, David Adair, the Rocket Man, joins us. We'll talk about that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. David Adair, of course, internationally recognized leader and expert in the field of space technology, spin-off applications for industry, commercial use. He has worked as a research scientist in the fields of engineering, jet engine technology, rocket science, and nuclear physics as well. At the age of 11, he built his first rocket. At 17, he won the most outstanding in the field of engineering sciences from the U.S. Air Force. Huge write-ups in newspapers about that. At 19, he designed and fabricated a state-of-the-art mechanical system for changing jet turbine engines for the U.S. Navy as well. And here he is. We call him the Rocket Man, David Adair, back on Coast to Coast. David, always a pleasure to have you on, my friend.
Thanks, George. Glad to be here.
This is an interesting subject, something that is very dear to my heart. We've been talking about this for several years now. Protecting our power grid from either a solar flare from the sun or from some nation that decides to detonate a nuke over our country that could just take out the power grid as well. I'm glad you're getting aboard on this, David. Tell me your thoughts about this.
Getting on board, that was interesting in itself. I wasn't planning on doing all this. I just got kind of vacuumed into it. It all started when my wife passed away, and I was sitting in the lab, and I thought, man, I've got to find something to do. So I thought I'd go back to speaking, and I started calling some of my former clients. So I started calling some of the Fortune 500 companies, and they all wanted me back. And I thought, well, no problem there. Maybe I'll find something else. Then I looked in one of my files, and NECA showed up, and that's the National Rural Electric Co-op Association. And I thought, wow, yeah, I know about 200 of those groups. If you didn't know this, there are 900 rural electric co-ops in the continent of North America. Those 900 groups represent your entire electric grid.
Wow.
In 48 states of North America. So I had talked to them before over space shuttles and other stuff, and they really liked it. I went to 200 electric co-ops. So I called a couple of them. While I was talking to them, I just thought I'd ask them a couple of questions. I said, do you guys know about the SPWC? And they go, well, what is that, a union? I said, no. Space Weather Prediction Center. No, what's that? I said, do you know a guy named Teo Stein? He runs it. And they said, no. Do you know anything about stereo A and B? No, is that some kind of new stereo system? No, man, those are satellites. They're 1 million miles out from Earth. They're in orbit, and they're designed to detect CMEs. And you guys know about CMEs, right? And he goes, no, what's that?
Oh, jeez.
And I'm going, holy smokes. I said, you don't know about CMEs? I said, well, what happens is these satellites are hooked directly into the command center in Boulder, Colorado, at the SPWC. And they got a nice website, and they have an alert network. And when these things come in, Teo will send the signal out, and you guys will get the signal. And they said, never heard of it. And I'm going, what?
That's so amazing.
So I said, I'll call you back in a minute. So I call up SPWC, get Mr. Stein on the phone. And I told him, how many of the electric rural co-ops do you have signed up? He said, I don't think we have any. What? And he goes, yeah. Well, I said, what? He says, well, he said, calm down a minute. First of all, he said, my job is to run the command center, to run the website, and to monitor and work with the satellites. And when I see something, I send out a signal. It's not my job to sign people up. And I'm going, holy smokes, you have 900 electric co-ops out there and nobody knows about you. He goes, yeah, it's kind of crazy, isn't it? And I find Mr. Stein is like an oxymoron, a jumbo shrimp. He's an honest bureaucrat. And it's amazing. He just, you know, he's just telling me it's not my job. So I started calling everybody back. Anyway, I have 118 electric co-ops signed up on the network right now. And I'm doing it from my house, which is nuts. I shouldn't be having to do this. So I thought, man, I need to talk to somebody about this. So I started looking at the internet, looking at everything, and find out, yeah, there is something in place to take care of a CME hit from the sun or an EMP attack. And it's called the SHIELD Act, and it was sponsored by...
that was Brian Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, well, Congressman Trent Franks, he's a Republican in Arizona, and Congresswoman Yvette Clark, a Democrat in New York, those two started it years ago. That's another thing. It's been out for about 6 years. And they wrote the act up. It's about a 25-page act, and it's called the SHIELD Act. Well, it's been sitting there, and it has died twice now in the Senate subcommittees. They're playing politics with this, and they're rolling the dice with your lives.
They are. Now, but hasn't Congressman Fitzpatrick out of Pennsylvania, hasn't he run with this to get this reintroduced?
Yeah, he's trying to join with Trent Franks and Yvette Clark, and it's still not going anywhere.
Jeez.
So I talked to Trent Frank, and he assigned a guy named Andy Brom to me. And Andy and I talked for a good while, and then finally I said, Andy, I need names and addresses of people who I need to, I can unleash a flood of response to this thing. So he gave me the, which I sent to you in an email, the names of the U.S. Senator, Lisa Murkowski. She's of Alaska. She is the chairwoman of the Senate committee. And Congressman Greg Walton is the chairman of the House committee. And those two are going to decide the fate of the SHIELD Act.
I hope they get it going, because it is a desperate situation. David, when we've got this nut job in North Korea threatening to launch nukes at us, whether they hit us on land or if they create an EMP, I've been told, in the work that William Forstian, one of our guests who wrote a book, One Second After, has told us, 90% of the Americans will be dead within a year if there's a power grid outage across the country. 90%.
The National Intelligence Council, which speaks for the entire U.S. intelligence community, they put out a report called Global Trends 2030, and they said that an EMP is only one of eight black swan events. And you guys know what black swans are.
Explain that.
Black swan is an event that can change the course of global civilization.
Okay.
And this is one of them.
Another
one is CME. So you have a CME and an EMP, and you don't really want to get them confused. The most oversimplified explanation of difference is a CME is created by the sun. An EMP is created by a human.
And about 5 years ago, we dodged a huge solar storm, didn't we?
Man, did you ever. All you got to do is, if you got a computer, write down this date, July 23rd, 2012. And just type that date in the computer and start reading. What happened was not one, not two, but three CMEs came straight at Earth. And it passed so close, it was only 110,000 miles away from the Earth. That's less than half the distance to the moon. That's closer than any asteroid that ever come in, of anything that represents the magnitude of this disruption. But these three CMEs were a perfect storm. Now, just one CME by itself, like in 1859 with the Carrollton event, you got to understand something about a CME. It's 1 billion tons of charged plasma. That is the size and weight of Mount Everest. It will cross 93 million miles in 14 hours. It's just below sublight speed. Imagine that. Well, that mass did hit us back in September of 1859, and it promptly just burned out
the telegraph system.
The telegraph, and it pretty much took out the Victorian Internet, which was the telegraph back then.
That was the so-called Carrington event.
That's right, named after Joseph Carrington, a British astronomer who actually saw the flare from the sun with his own eyes. And he followed the events, and that's how he got labeled with it. But this thing in July 23rd, 2012, was three of them in a row. And what would have happened, the first one would have hit the Van Allen radiation belts and scooted around them, then collided on the other side, cascaded over the surface, and it would have really weakened the Van Allen belts pretty badly, and it would start doing its disruptions. But two and three would have came sailing in without much resistance from the Van Allen belts. They would have collided and cascaded over the planet. And if that happened, we would not be talking.
We lucked out on that one because
everything
went off to the side. Had that been a direct hit, toast.
We're gone.
Yeah.
We're burned. See, what would happen, this is what's so bad about it, is that they'd come in with that charged plasma, and it hit the lines, the power lines. Then it's going to send what is known, there's an E1, 2, and 3 of pulse that comes through there. And the pulses are going to be of such magnitude that they'll back through the line systems and they'll hit the transformers. Now look at every power pole around you. You'll see transformers everywhere. Those transformers are filled with oil to keep the heat down as the electrons fly through. But this spike will be of such a magnitude, it will detonate that transformer. Now imagine all the transformers from coast to coast detonates at one time. It's like napalm, and the entire continent is on fire. You can't call the fire department. There's no telephones. There's no 911. You can't call police. You can't call anybody. Everything's on fire. Now, well, let's put water on it. No pumps running. There's no power to pump the water to put out the fires. So you can't put them out. The entire continent's on fire. And it's not just us. It's all continents on the planet. They're all burning. What will happen? Enough smoke and ash will be thrown in the air, and you'll lose the sun and not see it for about 3 years. All vegetation dies. What's happening with us? We all die. The National Intelligence Council said that anywhere from 90 to 93% of all U.S. population would die within the first 12 months.
Yeah, that's just frightening. I mean, everything goes. You can't get water. People don't realize, David, that water just doesn't come out of your faucet. It's being pumped with electrical pumps from the pumping source.
Absolutely. And it's just, what really happens is a chain reaction. So there you are, everything's burning. People running everywhere, can't call any help, and so now you can't even flush your toilets. You can't, your food in your refrigerator is bad.
You can't get bottled water because the stores have had a run on it. They're gone.
And now, that's exactly right. And now you'll have people dying. Then there's disease, starvation. That's what really takes the 93%.
And for several billion dollars, what we probably waste in our budgets, they could fix the power grid and insulate it against an EMP or CME.
That is exactly right. In the SHIELD Act, they propose taking $10 billion. How much is it going to cost taxpayers? Nothing. It's already there.
You would think the power companies alone, David, would want to pay for this.
They're the ones resisting it. They said it's going to increase costs, and it won't. DOE has a $30 billion annual budget. $30 billion at DOE. What did they spend $30 billion on every 12
months? That's crazy. David, stay with us. We're going to come up to a break. I want to come back and talk more about this and also ask you a few questions about rocket science, of course, and propulsion. And then we'll take calls with you next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. David Adair with us, the Rocket Man. David Adair, the Rocket Man, with us as we talk about EMPs and CMEs and protecting our course, our power grid. We'll take calls with David next hour here on Coast to Coast. I also want to get into some rocket science with him. And welcome back to Coast, David Adair with us. David, I want to thank you for getting behind the SHIELD Act and trying to get something done and finally passed. All the help we can get is so critical.
It is, and actually that's exactly what I need help from everybody that's listening. We don't have to suffer from this incident. There is a way to fix it. The SHIELD Act is a way to get it. So how do you get the SHIELD Act to pass? Well, you bring to bear pressure onto the two chair people I just named earlier, Lisa Malofsky, a senator, and Greg Waldron, a congressman. What you do is very simple. Do you remember George and the black and white movie, Miracle on 34th Street?
I love that movie.
And at the end of the movie, all those letters came in to the judge. And
yep.
Buried him.
And that's how he proved there was a Santa Claus.
Now, the judge wasn't about to argue with the post office, and it was very cute. Well, that's exactly what can happen. Y'all can make that happen to these two chair people at their office. I learned something from talking to the senators. They said, they get hundreds of emails a day, and they just pretty much blow them off or just brush them aside. But if a letter comes in that's addressed and stamped, they've got to get somebody to open it. You got to read it. You got to respond it. You got to file it. And if they get 10 letters on one subject, they start moving on it. Just 10.
That's impressive.
Yeah, because nobody uses letters anymore. But they figure if 10 letters come in written, damn, that must be serious, and they jump on it.
All right. Well, now, we talked about that July 2012 date where we dodged some solar flares. You have another date, April 16, 2013, which I believe was a day after the Boston Marathon. What's so ominous? Yeah. What's so ominous about this one now?
Oh, my God. It was a sophisticated assault onto the Pacific Gas and Electric substation, which is a substation for Silicon Valley.
Mm.
And what happened is that the camera showed a flash of light, which they figured out later with the flashlight. And in just minutes, all the motion sensors were shot out. All the video cameras were shot out. And so they, they were trying to make sense of that, and that occurred at 12:58 a.m. Then,
and we think it was a test.
What happened in 58 minutes is unreal. In 58 minutes, someone went into the substation. They shot out 17 giant transformers, 16 relays, which are big as a person. They cut through a vault door, went to the underground fiber optic cables, cut them in half, and when they went to the vault door, they used a magnesium burn rod.
Jeez. So this was sophisticated.
Now, they, when finally, let's see, then about, this is perfect, at 1:41 a.m., the sheriff's department got a call, a 911 call about gunfire. So they went out there and looked, and the front gate was still locked, and they left. They just left.
Where was the security?
They hadn't responded yet. Finally, about 1:45 a.m., there's now 52,000 gallons of oil on the ground from the transformers.
Spilling.
52,000 gallons. And they saw on another flashlight signal, and when the first P&G worker arrived to survey the damage, that's when he started finding everything, but everybody was gone. The place was quiet, like nothing happened. They found 100 7.62 by 39 millimeter rounds, AK-47 rounds.
See, we think it was a test, David. We think it was a test by a group just to see what would happen.
They found little stacks of rocks here and there, everywhere, and they didn't know what it was. And the minute I heard that, I went, I know what it is. That's pre-marking. Somebody came in here and pre-marked that place where to shoot from. It was so they have really planned this thing out. They were in and out. And when the FBI showed up and investigated, they said, oh, this is not work of a terrorist. This was vandals.
Yeah.
These vandals.
Pretty sophisticated vandals.
Rods, AK-47s, and precisely took out all of the security cameras, motion sensors. This is not Billy Bob and Bubba with beers in them. This was a sophisticated assault, and you're right. It was a dry one. And by the way, in 58 minutes, it did $15 million worth of damage, and it took over 6 months to get that thing back online. They just rerouted the demands. That station was knocked out completely. So if you think you're sitting there and you're safe, think again, because you done had a dry run on the Pacific Gas and Electric substation at Metcalf in California, just outside Silicon Valley. And it was, by the way, that's within eyesight of an interstate, and no one saw nothing.
Not a thing. Now, you have another date, another ominous date, about a year later, July 16th of 2013. What happened?
Yeah, 3 months later, Panama Canal pulls this North Korean flagged ship out of the canal, and they park it, and they're suspicious. There's something strange about the crew. They're acting weird. And as they board the ship, they grab the captain, who's about to put a gun barrel in his mouth. He's going to commit suicide. So they went, there's something going on with this ship. And it just came from Cuba. And it's a Korean ship. So they started digging 100,000 bags of sugar, or no, 250,000 bags of sugar. And they started digging. And they said, there's something wrong here. They kept digging, and they hit a false bottom of this ship. And they opened up the bottom, and there are two missiles laying there with launchers.
Two missiles.
These are big missiles. And I saw pictures of them, and I looked at them, and I called up some friends at Jane's. You know, Jane's directory.
Yeah, the military booklet.
Right.
Yeah.
Jane's Defense Weekly.
Yeah.
And I've worked for these people before, so I called them up, and I started asking them questions. I said, you guys see the photos? They said, yeah, we're looking at them. And they said, well, the radar unit is an SRN-75 Fan Song radar. I said, yeah, I know. It was made in 1957, and it really was put to use in North Vietnam. That's what guided all the SAM missiles. And they said, yeah. But then I asked them another question. I said, it also is part of the SA-2 air defense. And he goes, yeah, you're right. And I said, you know what else that works with? SS-4s. And he goes, yeah, why are you asking this? Because there were 2,335 SS-4s built in the Soviet Union. They're mid-range nuclear missiles, warhead carriers. And in SALT agreement in 1993, they destroyed them all. But the SS-4s were the missiles that was in Cuba.
I thought they got rid of all of those.
They supposed to. Remember, there were 2,335 of them. Turned out there was 9 of them in Cuba. Well, I asked Jane, can you check that for me? And they went, son of a gun, 6 missiles returned, 9 more hits. There are 3 missiles missing.
We missed it. Wow.
And
there they were.
What incredible karma. The 2 missiles that were in the original stack of missiles over Cuba missile crisis is now in the belly of the ship, en route to a little fat guy who's going to load these things with the nose cones were empty. He's going to put an EMP weapon in there. And the reason the SS-4s work so well, they carry a 2.3 megaton warhead.
Where would they have launched them from, David?
Pardon?
Where would they have launched them from?
This is where it really gets good. They were going to drop the sugar not just to Korea, but they were also going to drop it in Mexico.
Too close.
And the range on these missiles are 2,080 miles.
Yeah, way too close.
So you drag the 2 missiles off the ship, put them out there in Mexico, and you fire them. They go 300 nautical miles straight up over North America. And by the way, you can check this out. There's no defense missile system on the southwest corner of the United States.
To shut down the grid, how many missiles do you need to launch across the country? Just one?
One. 300 miles straight up of over somebody like Kansas, dead center of the continent. It detonates at a 1.5 to 2 megaton warhead. The EMP will cascade over the entire 48 states, and we are in the dark for years.
And see, just so people know, the explosion doesn't kill anybody. The after effects of the grid going down and the loss of services, that's what gets
killer, it's societal collapse. And one thing I tell people at a conference, I said, you realize there is one thing that will survive through all that. They go, what? The 400 million handguns and all the ammo.
That's right.
Everybody. Now there's no food, no water, no police, no way to call anybody for help. You're starving, desperate, and you've got guns out the wazoo. What do you think is going to happen? And that's where the numbers jump up to 93% dead.
Survival of the fittest, David.
It will take over.
And it's fixable, and it's fixable. Newt Gingrich.
Absolutely, you can fix this. All you got to do is send two letters, two postage stamps. All it costs you to avoid all this. You send it to Lisa McCloskey and one to Greg Walden. Now all you got to say in a letter, whatever you want, write 10 pages is more the better. But just write, I support the SHIELD Act. Sign it and date it, drop it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, and mail it.
What about calls to the office?
Pardon?
What about calls to the office?
You can do that, too. I've got their phone numbers if you want them.
I've got them. We're going to put them up on our website later.
Yeah, put them up on your website. Yeah, give them a call. That's even better. But send a letter, too. The letters, it's something about the letters that just make them jump.
Well, they're there. They're physical. They see them.
It's something that really pushes their buttons. Phone calls, they don't care. But handwritten letters, it really rattles them. So I want Miracle on 34th Street, where the judge carries under all the letters. I want y'all to write this kind of letters, that many, going to these two people, and you'll get yourself a SHIELD Act.
David, is there a digital campaign behind this at all, like Facebook or anything like that?
No. I don't know how I ended up in this spot. I'm the only one that's doing it. There's nothing out there.
Do you know F. Michael Maloof or William Forstchen or Peter Pry?
No, I haven't.
All right. Peter Pry, of course, is an executive heading up an organization trying to get the SHIELD Act passed. And Forstchen and Maloof have written extensive books about CMEs and EMPs. I need to get you in touch with them and keep pushing. You know, Newt Gingrich, when he was the Speaker of the House, was a supporter of doing something like this, too.
Yeah. But the one thing that, you know, don't underestimate these little letters, y'all. I'll give you an example. You don't think that kind of system works? Well, how in the heck did Trump become president? It was a group of voters that the reason they voted him in, he doesn't play well in a sandbox. He doesn't like Democrats. He doesn't like Republicans. Those voters wanted to send a splinter or a thorn into both parties, and that's how he became.
That's true. That's true.
Now, that same force out there, you're hearing my voice. Send some letters. Drown those people like in Miracle 34th Street. Drown these two chair people till they can't even move around their office. There's, 250 million listeners on this thing? Just 1%. What an impact it would have.
Talk about millions, David. Millions of listeners now.
I told the committees, I volunteer. I will build the shield. I will harden the grid. I know how to do it.
You know how to do it. Of course you do. And you know what? There's some great engineers who would work with you to get this done.
I'll do it for free. I just want to get it done. And, yeah, I'm 63. I'll kill over soon. But you know what? I was watching kids play out on a playground. I was watching them chase each other and stuff. And I was sitting there thinking, that's so grim that these kids will not grow up, fall in love, have a family, raise kids. They're all going to die if a CME hits.
If it hits. We all go.
We all go. And I just want, you know, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, I don't have any of them. I just want to see them make it.
And let me tell you, David, you don't think that nut job from North Korea would not launch a EMP attack if he could get away with it?
Get it together. He's trying. He was trying to get those. Jane said, "Well, you know, those are mid 20th century." Yeah, but they'll carry an EMP warhead perfectly into position and detonate it. And that little guy's trying to get his hands on it.
And if you launch it from a rogue nation, if you launch it from Mexico, you have no idea who the originator was.
Exactly. And look at the cast of characters. North Korea, Cuba, and they wasn't sure about this, but they believe Iran was involved.
Maybe.
And I'm sitting there going, holy smokes. And then they drop it off in Mexico because there's no defense system on the southwest corner. Didn't think we needed it. And bang, they got it.
David Adair with us. We're going to take phone calls next hour with David. We're going to talk a little bit about rocket science and propulsion, get his thoughts on privatization of space as well. David was 17 years old, folks, when he won the most outstanding in the field of engineering sciences from the U.S. Air Force. And you took that 17-year-old award and developed yourself one heck of an engineering career, David.
I guess it is.
There was a newspaper article about you, wasn't there, when you were 17?
There was about 100 of them. There were some recent ones. But, yeah, if you look on the Internet, it's just loaded with stuff.
Now, at 11, you built your first rocket. Were you good in school as a kid?
Not really. I had, C's and D's. I was just too busy working on
C's and D's? But you were a genius at what you did.
Yeah. The science teacher, he really noticed there was something odd about me. And he would invite me to his lab to work with him. And I wasn't in college prep classes. He just thought I was just a mediocre student. But when he went to get something from another teacher, I used the blackboards. They're really handy. I didn't have a big blackboard. And I started working out some of my quantum physics differential mechanics. And he came in, and I was erasing it. But you can still see, when you erase something, you can still see the transparent writing that's still there. And he was looking at it, and he looked at this notebook I had, and he didn't say anything. He told me to go to the office and getting some new erasers, and I thought, yeah, I made a mess. While I was gone, he had a copier, and he copied pages of this notebook. I kept everything in, and then he took it to his alumni. He had dual PhDs in chemistry and physics, and he graduated from Ohio State. So he took it to his alumni. They looked at it, walked across the street to Battelle Memorial, and they handed the papers over there, and they asked, who wrote this? And they said, some kids flying rockets in a cow field.
I love that. I love
and
that.
And that's when everything started.
Last time I was with David in person, he loved my shirts. Remember that, David?
Yeah, man, you wear the neatest pastel colors I've ever seen. You're quite a fashion leader in that area.
This guy was in this huge luncheon yelling at my shirts, and I realized it was David Adair. And
great shirts.
David, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. I want to talk with you about rocket science, get your thoughts on privatization of space, and, of course, a full hour to go of phone calls as we talk about protecting the grid, the SHIELD Act, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, and also Congressman Greg Walden. They are the ones working on this as well. And as David said, send them a letter. Send them a letter, just like Miracle on 34th Street.